today, I believe you've got something a little bit different for us. From instead of concentrating on the actual Axis war heroes, I believe you're going to be concentrating on an incident that happened during World War II. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. There is a Knight's Cross recipient involved in this. Well, he got the Knight's Cross some days later after the incident. But you could say there's a German war hero involved here. But yes, the main subject is the Laconia incident. And it took place not too far from, and at the time, Marseille was having his great successes in Africa. Among the sources I used was a Deutsches U-Boot Museum online edition and a book called An Alle Wölfe Angriff by Franz Kurowski, dealing with the German submarines in World War II. Laconia was a British troop ship. Originally, it was built as an ocean liner, completed in 1921, but then at the beginning of World War II, it was converted into an armed merchant cruiser and then into a troop ship. This meant it was a war vessel, and it was armed with 8 6-inch cannons and 2 3-inch cannons. That's roughly 15 and 8 centimeter caliber. She was about 180 meters long, and that's about 600 feet. In 1942, under the command of Captain Rudolf Sharp, she was sailing from Cape Town in South Africa to Freetown in Sierra Leone, which was a British crown colony at the time. On the 12th of September, about midway between Ascension Island and Sierra Leone, she was spotted by the crew of the U-boat, U-156, under the command of Korvettenkapitän Werner Hartenstein, who was on his fourth patrol of his career. He was already highly decorated at that point, having earned the German Cross in gold and the Iron Cross of both classes. After approaching the vessel on an intercept course for a few hours on the surface, Hartenstein gave the order to submerge and, closing in further, observing through the periscope, they were able to identify the vessel as the RMS Laconia. Hartenstein ordered the torpedo tubes to be flooded and loaded, and the muzzle flaps to be opened. After the necessary calculations, Hartenstein ordered the torpedoes to be launched. Two torpedoes hit the Laconia, and at 22 minutes past 10 p.m., the Laconia radioed that she had been torpedoed and her position. Nobody but U-156 seems to have received that distress call and those that followed. Laconia was carrying 463 officers and crew, 256 British Army soldiers, 1,793 Italian prisoners of war, a different source says 1,809, and 103 Polish soldiers, which were the guards of the prisoners. As Laconia was sinking, the Italian prisoners were left locked up, but most were miraculously able to escape by breaking down hatches or climbing up ventilation shafts. I guess people can develop extraordinary strength and initiative when threatened by an otherwise certain horrible death. A lot of them were shot, however, when they appeared on deck, and even more bayoneted, stabbed to death with the bayonets mounted on the rifles by the Poles and the British soldiers. A lot of people had jumped into the water before all lifeboats were launched, and so there were boats with only a few passengers. When the Italians tried to climb aboard the life rafts, they were shot or their hands hacked off with axes. Somehow, Italian POWs did manage to board one life raft, however. As you can imagine, the blood in the water soon attracted sharks. As Italian Corporal Dino Monte later recounted, sharks started among us, grabbing an arm, biting a leg. Other large beasts swallowed entire bodies, end quote. Meanwhile, U-156 surfaced to capture senior officers or acquire important documents. As they approached, cutting through the darkness with a searchlight, they were horrified to see so many people in the water, dead bodies and people struggling for their lives, civilians among them, even women and children, and Italian prisoners. Hartenstein immediately ordered a rescue operation and to fly the Red Cross flag. Laconia disappeared below the waves 23 minutes past 11 p.m., so she had managed to stay afloat for more than an hour after the attack. Hartenstein sent a coded radio message to Admiral Karl Dönitz, stating that he had sunk Laconia, giving the exact position, reporting that unfortunately 1,500 Italian POWs had been on board, that 90 of them had been fished out of the water, stating how much fuel and torpedoes they had left and requesting further orders. Two German U-boats and an Italian submarine were ordered to help pick up the survivors. Vichy France sent a cruiser and two other ships. U-156 was crammed with nearly 200 survivors, including five women, and another 200 were in lifeboats attached to the U-boat. At 6 o'clock in the morning of the next day, Hartenstein had the following message broadcast in plain English, uncoded. Quote, "If any ship will assist the shipwrecked Laconia crew, I will not attack, providing I am not being attacked by ship or air forces. I picked up 193 men, 4 degrees 53 minutes south, 11 degrees 26 minutes west, German submarine." The British in Freetown received that message, but 2 days later they passed on to the Americans only that Laconia had been torpedoed and that a British merchant ship was on the way to pick up survivors. No mention of the Germans rescuing the British, Poles and Italians. U-156 meanwhile remained in position, and on the 15th she was finally joined by the two German U-boats and the Italian submarine. These four vessels with all these survivors on board, above and below deck, were slowly heading for the African coast to rendezvous with the Vichy France vessels. During the night, the submarines became separated, and on the 16th at 11 o'clock 25 minutes a.m., U-156 was spotted by an American B-24 Liberator operating from a secret airbase on Ascension Island. The U-boat was traveling with a Red Cross flag draped across her gun deck. Hartenstein sent Morse code signals in English to the crew of the B-24 requesting assistance. A British officer also signaled to B-24. Quote, "RAF officers speaking from German submarine, Laconia, survivors on board, soldiers, civilians, women, children," end quote. The B-24 did not reply in any way and turned away, notifying their superiors about the shipwrecked survivors and the Red Cross flag. The American senior officer in charge, Captain Robert C. Richardson III, who was later promoted to general, ordered the B-24 to attack. The pilot turned back towards the U-boat and attacked with bombs and depth charges. One bomb landed among the lifeboats, killing dozens of the survivors. The U-boat itself was damaged, but not critically. However, because the battery started emitting gases, he had to order all non-crew to leave the ship, including the Italians, because there were not enough Tauchretter available. Tauchretter are emergency breathing sets, usually called escape sets in English. Hartenstein ordered the lifeboats to be cut loose and the survivors on deck to jump into the water and swim away as fast as possible. On his orders, the submarine submerged only slowly so as to not to drag down the survivors with them into the depth.
That's pretty shocking, isn't it, to be bombing survivors. The Germans are really honourable to be going to pick them up under the Red Cross flag. Do you know much about this Red Cross flag, Schmidt? Was this something that all the forces were involved in? Was this like if the British had seen Germans in the water? Would they have put a Red Cross flag on and picked them up? If the Americans had seen British in the water, would they have picked them up under a Red Cross flag? Was this a generally accepted behavior of the powers at the time, do you know?
Well, I read a... I don't remember the exact publication, but it was something like International Court, something like that. And they said that this had been a war crime because, among other things, of the Red Cross flag. And I don't know whether the Allies used them much or whether Germans used them in other incidents like this. I don't even know if there was ever a similar incident like this. I might have to look that up and maybe report on this in another episode.
I think the general law of the sea is that if you see people in the water, you have to go and pick them up. This is the problem that we have in Europe at the moment, because when we see these stranded vessels filled up with Africans, the maritime law or the law at sea says that if you see a boat that's in distress, you have to go and rescue them. That's just the law. It's always been, regardless of what race or country they come from. And it would seem that even if you are at war with them, that if you see a boat that's at sea that's in distress, then you have to go and pick them up. You have to go and rescue them. That just seems to be the ruling on this. Dennis, have you got a comment you'd like to make on this before Schmidt continues?
Well, it's just that... In a way, I'm not really surprised, because when I was doing the documentary, Adolf Hitler, the greatest story ever told, obviously, you know, atrocities which we'd never heard of before were being uncovered. And I'm quite sure there's many, many others also unheard of which have got away scot-free. And that annoys me, because these people who perpetrated these atrocities actually either did get decorated, as Schmidt just told us, or they got away scot-free. And it's frustrating, to say the least.
Well, it's the same behaviour that we saw with the bombing of Dresden, isn't it? They bombed Dresden, and then when emergency services came out to rescue the people, they went and bombed them again. And this time, you've got this ship, this Laconia, which is already being hit, and then you've got the Germans that say, "Well, we'll take the part of the emergency services. We'll go and pick them up." And then you've got the Americans bombing them again. So these survivors that think, you know, well, we've just been rescued, suddenly they're being fired upon by their own side.
Can I just say as well, by the way, as you know, lately we've been hearing these reports of atrocities in Aleppo and calls for war crimes by the very same people who actually targeted German civilians in World War II. You know, it's just for some people to contemplate when the propaganda is going on that, you know, Britain have targeted civilians in the past, and all of a sudden now are taking the white hat stance with Putin.
Oh, it's just incredible hypocrisy that we're seeing going on over there in the Middle East, and as well with attacking Mosul because it's got terrorists in it, that's fine. But if Russia goes in and attacks Western Aleppo because it's got terrorists in it, oh, well, that's a war crime. Never mind the fact that the terrorists keep bombing the other side of Aleppo and hitting schools and hospitals, but that's all covered up. Yeah, it's terrible hypocrisy that we see, but yeah, as you say, Dennis, we should be expecting it after the hypocritical behaviour in the war.
Even this week, Britain have sent some advisors, inverted commas, to train the rebels, apparently, to attack ISIS. Now, make of that as you will.
I think all that training is just going to go and help ISIS, isn't it?
I would have thought so.
They're not going to fight against their brothers, are they? They're not as stupid as us white people are fighting against our brothers during the Second World War. The Muslims don't do that. They go.
Well, that was an official announcement this week, so.
Yeah. Schmidt, do you have a comment on that, or do you want to continue with your presentation?
Well, regarding Syria, there was this Swiss journalist who interviewed Assad the other day, maybe a week and a half ago or so. And he asked Assad about these barrel bombs that he used allegedly, and it made it sound like this was the worst war crime that could be committed, using barrel bombs. And Assad stayed very cool and asked him what his definition of a barrel bomb was, and and how, if I remember correctly, how a barrel bomb was any worse than any other bomb, and that kind of shut the so-called journalist down for a bit. It's incredible how people are conned into thinking that the Syrians, or at least the Assad government, is committing all these horrible war crimes when there's actually no evidence for that. And even the alleged tortures and there's no evidence for that except very suspect people claiming it, paid for by these Arab Gulf states, usually. I mean, the reports about these tortures are paid for by the Arab Gulf states.
That's right.
Yeah, there's a lot of organisations over there. They claim to be these NGOs that are supposed to be neutral, and they're not neutral because they're all either paid by the Gulf states, or they're in the pay of Soros, or in the pay of these Jews, and the people, the actual Syrian people that support their government, that voted for their government, we never actually hear from them. We don't hear from them at all. It's just these white helmets that they've given this award to. I mean, they're funded by the West. So they're clearly not going to point out that the crimes that the rebels are carrying out, are they? You know, it's just, yeah. Anyway, we should probably get back to this Laconia incident, Schmidt. Please continue.
Very well. The pilots of the B-24 reported back to base that, quote, "the sub rolled over and was last seen bottom up. Crew had abandoned ship and taken to surrounding lifeboats," end quote. That's, of course, not true. The U-156 was not sunk. The crew of the B-24 were later awarded medals for the supposed sinking of U-156 when all they did was kill shipwrecked survivors and damage U-156. The survivors in two of the lifeboats decided to go against Hartenstein's request that they stay in the area to be rescued by neutral Vichy French ships. They instead headed for the African coastline. One of them, with 68 people on board initially, reached the African coast 27 days later with only 16 survivors. The other one was rescued by a British trawler after 40 days at sea. Only 4 of the initial 52 were still alive. Now, all of this, to me personally, seems to be the result of the demonization of Germany and Germans in the Allied propaganda. I have no other explanation to offer. The other 3 submarines were unaware of the attack until the Italian one picked up survivors from the attack on U-156. Soon thereafter, the submarines received confirmation by a radio message of the attack on U-156 and were asked for the number of rescued survivors. U-506 replied that they had 151, including 9 women and children. U-507 replied that they had 491, 15 of which were women and 16 children. On the 17th, the British in Freetown sent a message to Ascension Island telling the Americans that 3 French ships were on their way, but without telling them that they were on a rescue mission. The American officer in charge then apparently assumed they were on their way to invade the island, so the submarine hunting was called off and they prepared for an invasion. The Vichy French ships picked up 373 Italians, 70 Poles, and 597 British, including 48 women and children. Colonel Baldwin, on behalf of all the British survivors, presented the rescuers with a letter that reads as follows, quote, "We, the undersigned officers of His Majesty's Navy, Army, and Air Force, and of the Merchant Navy, and also on behalf of the Polish detachment, the prisoners of war, the women and children, wish to express to you our deepest and sincerest gratitude for all you have done, at the cost of very great difficulties for your ship and her crew, in welcoming us, the survivors of His Majesty's transport ship, the Laconia." End quote. All in all, of the 2,732 people on board the Laconia when it was attacked, only 1,113 survived. 1,420 of the 1,619 who died were Italian prisoners of war. As a consequence of these actions by the Allies, Admiral Dönitz issued a standing order, Triton Null, which was later generally called the Laconia Order. It forbade German U-boat crews from taking survivors of enemy warships on board, except important officers or engineers. Even after the order was issued, however, German U-boat commanders still provided aid to survivors occasionally. At the Nuremberg trials, Dönitz, the legitimate German head of state at the time, was indicted for war crimes, especially because of the Laconia Order. The defense team for Dönitz was able to clearly prove that the U.S. had practiced unrestricted submarine warfare in the Pacific from day one on, and so did the British. Even Chester William Nimitz, U.S. Fleet Admiral, testified. Yet, as we know, Dönitz was condemned to 10 years in prison. Evidence clearly mattered very little at the Nuremberg trials, as we can see again. I would like to end by reading a letter from a relative of one of the casualties of the Laconia incident to Horst Bredow of the Deutsche U-Boot Museum. Dear Mr. Bredow, U-156 sinking of Cunard liner Laconia, 12th of September 1942. I feel that I must write to you in view of the information which has come to light during the Battle of the Atlantic commemoration ceremony here in Liverpool during May of this year. My uncle, who was the bosun of the Laconia, did not survive its sinking. At that time, our family were merely informed that the ship had been torpedoed and sunk in the South Atlantic and that Uncle Willie had been lost. My father, who is now 84 years of age, had himself been the quartermaster on the Laconia, but had left her to join another ship some years prior to her sinking. 51 years later, during the Battle of the Atlantic Commemoration Week, I happened by chance to see one of the survivors of the Laconia interviewed on television. This gentleman told how the U-boat captain had surfaced and taken his lifeboat under tow, having provided the survivors with food and water. So unlikely did this seem that I decided at this point to make some inquiries and discover the truth for myself. My search led me initially to a retired Royal Naval Submarine Commander attached to our local Royal Navy Association. He not only confirmed the survivor story, but allowed me to see an account of the incident in a book entitled Wolf Packs, which had been presented to the Liverpool RNA in 1990, by visiting German U-boat veterans. He also obtained on my behalf much information concerning the commander of U-156, Commander Werner Hartenstein. From there, I continued my search in our local reference library, where I found a book entitled U-Boats to the Rescue, The Laconia Incident, by a French naval historian, Lance Bayard, I believe this name is pronounced. This book, together with other information which I managed to obtain, completely changed my opinion of the German submarine service and the German people as a nation. The purpose of this letter, therefore, is to say a very long overdue and sincere thank you on behalf of myself and my family for the considerable efforts made by Commander Hartenstein, Commanders Hartenstein, U-156, Würdemann, U-506, and Schacht, U-507, and their crews to rescue the survivors from Laconia. Nobody could possibly have asked more of these men than they gave. They were men of whom Germany can be justifiably proud, and they should be remembered by everyone as men of honor. It is with deep regret that I learned that none of these U-boats survived the war. If by chance any member of their crew are still alive and known to you, I would respectfully ask that you inform them on behalf of myself and my family that we shall remember them in future with respect rather than with contempt. I regret that I cannot say the same for the pilot and crew of the American Liberator aircraft, which repeatedly attacked U-156, which was clearly engaged in a mission of mercy. It strikes me as very sad that it has taken 51 years to learn the truth about the Laconia incident. Why the families in question were not informed of the commendable actions of the German U-boat crews is not clear. Possibly it was an oversight, or, on the other hand, maybe it was considered that to show the German submarine service a good light at the time might have gone in some way to destroy the propaganda campaign, which appears to have been so carefully constructed. The trouble with propaganda is, of course, that it continues to be believed long after the conflict has ended. At least some of us now see it for what it was. It does appear that a number of the survivors have, over the years, tried to make the true events of 12th of September 1942 known, and I enclose a copy of a letter to the journal Sea Breezes, dating from 1954, which I came across in my literature search. During Battle of the Atlantic week, I also met another survivor from the Laconia who had traveled many miles to Liverpool to tell his story. He was apparently only 14 and a half years of age when the ship was torpedoed, and he vividly remembers the kindness extended to him by Commander Hartenstein. He is aware that I am writing to you and wishes me to also pass on his gratitude. I hope that you will not object to my having written to you. I've tried for some weeks to find out to whom I should address my letter. In the end, Mr. Paul Hedgecock, RNR, provided me with your name and address. I wish you well, Mr. Bredow, as Paul tells me that you are not in the best of health. Please be assured that the German submarine veterans whom you represent have grown very considerably in stature here in Liverpool in recent weeks. The Battle of the Atlantic commemoration ceremony had very much in mind your tremendous losses as well as our own. Yours sincerely, Carol Patton, Mrs.
Well, it would have been anti-Semitic to put the Germans in a positive light, wouldn't it? You couldn't give them credit for doing anything good. Whoever does that would be accused of being anti-Semitic. Now, that's apparently the way that things stand now. If Ken Livingston speaks the truth and says Hitler helped the Jews move to Israel, that's anti-Semitic because it's portraying Adolf Hitler in a positive light. So I think that's the reason why the truth wasn't told about it. But think how decent these Germans are. They've been told not to go and pick the survivors up because the ship might or the submarine might get attacked, and yet they still carried on doing that. And it's interesting that you brought up the Nuremberg trial there, where they tried to say that Donitz was a barbarian for giving out this order. And when they did that, they inadvertently let slip that the Americans have been doing that right since the beginning of the war. They've been engaging in unrestricted submarine warfare right since the beginning of the war. So we see again that the Allies were conducting the war according to a completely different rule book to the Germans. The Germans were keeping to the treaties and the established rules of war that had been established before, and the Americans and the British threw all that out the window and just broke all those laws, targeted civilians, firebombed cities in Germany, and then at the end of it all did something that had never been done before in history and put the vanquished in a courtroom to be judged by the victors, which goes against every precedent in law that's ever been known. And yet still today, people think that people that are unaware of this sort of information think that there was nothing wrong with the Nuremberg trials. They don't think any further than the propaganda that they are taught. That's a really interesting story there, Schmidt. I'm very glad that you brought that to us today. Thank you for that. Dennis, have you got any comments you'd like to make on that?
Yeah, you've hit on a sore subject with me with the Nuremberg trials. I mean, it's an easy get out for a lot of people, and a lot of people have been fooled by it, are still being fooled by it. And it's just something that had never happened before in wartime. No leadership of any country at war had been taken to task. And obviously the evidence was either fabricated or made up. Stalin himself wanted just to shoot everybody, as Stalin would. But it's a little bit more calculated from the Freemasons. They wanted something in the history books, to so where they could, you know, future relatives could fall back on, and just to hang a person makes that picture just makes him out to be a criminal. So yeah, you just hit on a bit of a sort on a raw nerve with me.
Well, this is the thing with those Nuremberg trials. I mean, that's what people say, isn't it? They say, oh, yes, but it was established in the Nuremberg trials that they gassed millions of Jews. Of course, when you look into it, you find that that the actual laws of evidence weren't applied. The people that were giving testimonies had been tortured. Their families had been threatened. The witnesses were shown to be lying. And the defence weren't actually given anything that they could use to defend themselves with. No, they were told they could only use the prosecution documents. It's just shocking when you look into that. If anyone is interested in that, I recommend the David Irving book on the Nuremberg trials, which goes into great detail. And there's also a book which Simon Shepherd has over at Heretical Press. I can't recall the title of that one right now. Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Schmidt. Hopefully, we'll hear, we're going to hear more of your Axis War Hero series in the future.